This is KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. It's summer, and that means road trip season. And if your family was anything like mine, we took long road trips during the summer in a cramped car. But to pass the time, my parents would always share their stories about growing up. And like most kids that hear stories about their parents' wild childhood adventures, they can seem a little over the top and hard to believe. So today, KRCU is sharing your stories about growing up in Southeast Missouri from our new community project, Dear Heartland. Our first story comes from Cape Girardeau native Ramona Bailey and her daughter Peyton Robinson about a fishing trip gone wrong. I mean, really wrong.
Dear Heartland, there are times when I wonder if I shouldn't ask about her childhood, because most of the stuff she's told me, I still halfway don't believe.
I can remember my brother and I in the summertime. We didn't live far from Capitol Hall Park, and we spent a lot of days down there at Capitol Hall Park at that lagoon. And this one particular day, he decided we was going to go fishing at the lagoon. And that sounds like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. But when you don't have a fishing pole, you don't have no bait, nothing to put the fish in if you somehow finna catch one. But he found an old, those ice cream buckets, those quart gallon ice cream buckets. He took that down there and he put some grass in it. And I don't know what he used to catch a fish, but he did catch one. I don't know how, but he did. And at first it was going to be our pet. And people who know the lagoon, they like, okay, this is not. But that journey walk home was a little bit too much for the fish. His hopes of keeping it alive was putting it in the refrigerator. He put it in the refrigerator. But then once he realized that, okay, the fish didn't make it, he decided he was going to cook the fish. We'll say, how old were you guys at this time? I was probably 8, and he had to have been 9 or 10. He's just a couple years older than me. But now, mind you, the fish about, I say, four inches. That was going to be our lunch. I was like... No, not from the lagoon, not today. Needless to say, no, we did not get any fish to eat that day. He burned the fish. And the poor little fish probably wish he was back in his pond.
Like that fish, I never knew about that till now.
It's true.
Sure.
That was Ramona Bailey and her daughter, Peyton Robinson. Imagine hearing your earliest moments through the eyes of someone else. You know, like the day you were born, special moments you spent together, and where life's endless turns have taken you now. Our next Dear Heartland entry comes from Mary Ellen Boswell and her grandson Shane Sire in Cape Girardeau.
The morning you were born, and we brought cameras, but they were packed away across the room. So I have a photograph in my head of that point in time when you were born, and the doctor held you up in the room. And at that point, your mom's going, go get a camera, go get a camera. But that's the picture we wanted, but that's the picture that's in my head. So we took a picture of you later when the nurses had you, and you were in a little cradle type thing. Okay, so now we're going to jump from there. Okay. Because I know you have no comment to make on that. That was too far away. So when you were little, and they asked about stories in Southeast Missouri, so at our home, on our driveway, one of my best memories of us doing stuff together when you were a preschooler is we would get chalk and we would make roads on our driveway and mazes, and you would run your trucks. And we would walk and do things, stop at stop signs and all that kind of stuff. Do you remember doing a lot of chalk on our driveway?
Yes, and I had my dump truck as the driving one.
and it was really fun.
Do you remember doing some of the drawing yourself after
we got started? Like in kindergarten.
And in preschool?
Yes. No, I can't remember preschool. I can only remember kindergarten.
Oh, you can't remember back to preschool?
Well, the last year, yes.
Okay.
I did not want to be there one more year, but you made me.
At preschool?
Yeah, I was like, I want to go.
Please. Well, you never did like school.
Yeah, true.
Because it infringed on your personal time, right?
Yes, 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 because I need all the personal time.
So from there, you have now grown to a 12-year-old boy going into 7th grade, and you'd still rather not have to go to school.
Yes.
But you're learning lots of cool things.
No.
All right, what was a really neat thing you did this year in school?
So I did this rocket project. Well, I did not like it. I liked it a bit. I just thought it was too close to the end of the year to actually, like, focus on it and not be rushed. And I thought if we had more time, we could have done better. But I really like our rocket.
So it turned out pretty good after all?
Yes.
Because it's summer, you're going to go party?
Yes, and I'm going to use my computer. I'm going to have a good time, read comic books, graphic novels.
And go swimming?
Yes. Peace.
And I think we're out.
That was Mary Ellen Boswell and her grandson, Shane Sire. There's nothing quite like a good weekend at your grandparents' house, especially if you come from a big family. But the bigger the family, the more shenanigans there are to get into. And that's what it was like for Sykeston native Gary Howard, as he tells his daughter Kate about the mischief he got into with his cousins at their grandparents' home in Morehouse, Missouri.
Dear Heartland, I can tell that I'm getting old because I always say back in my day, we didn't have technology. We had a crate and a basketball. And it was go outside and play.
Yeah.
Just on my mom's side of the family, I am probably the youngest of probably 20 grandsons. So, yes, definitely old school. And being one of the youngest ones, I remember my grandpa had about 5 acres. And they had this huge tree on there. And the older cousins were building a tree house. And the only way that you could get up into this tree house was you had to climb. Well, they considered it a rope. It was more like a garden, you know, a water hose. And so they had it tied and you had to kind of climb up, you know, to get up into the tree. Well, being fairly young, I was unable to climb that rope, and that was kind of the purpose behind it was to keep some of us younger kids out of their treehouse, their clubhouse. And so one day, I remember my grandpa was standing outside on his front porch, and I come dragging this ladder across the front yard. And he was like, you know, Gary Lee, what are you doing? And I said, don't worry about it. And I just kind of just act like I ignored him. Now, granted, I'm probably 7, 8 years old. So I drag across the front yard and out into, through the garden and finally got to this treehouse as they were upstairs with their hammer and nails and building this thing. And I got up about as high as I could on that ladder and I took out a knife and I cut the garden hose and immediately knocked the ladder over and took off running. And my grandpa just sat there just laughing with a, you know, a grin on his face, kind of going, yeah, there's the ornery one. And, and screaming, you better run. They're going to get you. Well, they couldn't get me because they were still stuck up in the tree for a couple hours. And by then, mom and dad came pick me up and never got in any trouble. So. there's a lot of things that I think that, some generations and cultures, may not have that I was very blessed to have, and that was having a huge family because everything took place over at Grandma and Grandpa's house, like the time that, being one of the quote-unquote athletes of the family, I was the city boy because I lived in the city limits of a small town. Grandpa always yelled at us because we would play softball in the front yard. Well, probably being the only one that could actually hit or do anything to reach the house, we still played in the front yard. And he was gone one day, probably working, and we were all out in the front yard, you know, playing. And, yeah, I hit a pretty good, you know, lick, and it went right through one of the bedroom windows. And as everybody came out yelling, "Who did that?" I calmly handed the bat to one of my other cousins and said, "Hey, hold this." So, yeah, another opportunity that I didn't get in trouble. But luckily, we fixed the window before Grandpa got there and didn't get in any trouble.
Don't worry, I hear these stories every time I come down to my dad's house.
I know, you grow wiser.
That was Gary Howard and his daughter, Kate Howard. After the break, we'll hear from Southeast Missouri State University President Dr. Carlos Vargas. That coming up here on KRCU.
Hi, I'm Ari Shapiro. Love what you hear on your car radio, but don't love your car anymore? Well, donate it to us. Your car can be turned into the programs you love. Here's how.
Visit krcu.org and click on support for all the details.
This is Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Recently, the Board of Regents voted to increase tuition at Southeast. KRCU's General Manager Dan Woods spoke with Southeast President Dr. Carlos Vargas on the monthly program Focus on Southeast to talk about this and more.
The Board of Regents, as you know, of course, met on the 12th of May and approved a 2.8% tuition increase that will take effect in fall of 2017. What kind of impact will that increase have on the university's budget, which I know has been challenging as of late?
Well, yes, it is going to be challenging. Well, that increase is going to help us absorb some of the cuts that are being implemented on higher education, and some of them are, of course, that are affecting us. We have been working on that from the moment that the cuts were announced by Governor Greitens, and so we kept working and develop a plan, really a multi-year plan, to address this, because we thought that doing a one-year plan really was not the best way to proceed at this point. And so we did a three-year plan, and we have identified a number of ways of absorbing those cuts, those reductions. But it was going to be extremely difficult for us to really be able to take the whole to absorb all the cuts without increasing our tuition. And as you know, and I hope everybody knows, your listeners know, is that we value access and affordability tremendously at the university. We want to make it as easy as possible for students to be able to enroll in college and to finish their degree. So we ended up in the end having to propose this 2.8% increase to the tuition, which was approved on May 12th by the Board of Regents. The 2.8% really corresponds to $6.50 per credit hour for the university, so that's what we're going to be doing. And as you mentioned, the Board of Regents approved it. We did have very detailed and thorough conversations with the regents, justifying the reason why we wanted to do this, because the regents themselves are very committed to affordability in education. So that's what happened this May 12th, and I think we're going to be able to deal with this budget cuts as we move forward.
What are we looking ahead to FY18? Do we have any sense of what the state appropriation will look like? Is there going to be any early looks at that at this point?
Well, they actually ended up proposing a 6.58% reduction instead of the 9% that the governor had originally proposed. So it looks better than when we were thinking. To be honest, in years past, we have experienced a situation where we have been given maybe a small increase with the idea that we, you know, with the understanding that we wouldn't increase tuition. So we're always trying to balance those two things. But in the past, what's happened sometimes is that we actually have had a withholding halfway through the year. And so we are just being cautious here. We don't want to sing victory at this point. We want to be cautious and realize that because we're not really sure exactly how the revenue is going to end up being, that we want to not necessarily change at this point our projections, but wait until we are into the year. So.
And that's probably one of the reasons why there was a three-year plan,
yes. Right,
because things can change, as you know.
That is absolutely right. So, you know, if we were to have extra funds that we were not thinking we're going to have, we might be able to absorb the costs that we actually were planning for next year, maybe earlier. So it's not like we actually are going to have extra money to, you know, to do discretionary things. Every cent that really was cut, this is a cent that has been going to important initiatives in the university to focus on student success, on our ability to help students graduate and in a timely fashion and with as little debt as possible.
Let's spend a little time talking about just the Board of Regents in general. So many other things were approved, but kind of give our viewers just a peek behind the scenes. What are some of the things that the board does when they meet?
Sure, good, great question. The board meets anywhere from 4 to 6 times a year. And when we meet, we present to the board information in many cases, reports in many cases, and in some cases, items for action. As an example of what we do, for example, this last meeting in May, one of the things that they did, which is of paramount importance, is to approve the list of candidates for graduation. Many people don't know, but actually before we go to commencement, the Board of Regents has to formally approve the list of candidates. That's a process that every institution pretty much follows. So we did that. It happened to be the day before the actual commencement, but we did that. Another item that we did is we presented to them a proposal for the honorary doctorate that the university offered to Mr. Douglas C. Green, now Dr. Green, for his in recognizing his contributions and efforts on behalf of the university. We also provided them with information on some program changes, academic programs. So if every time we introduce a new degree or a new area, we need to go to the Board of Regents for approval before we can move that forward. So we, let's see, we also share with them the status of some of the projects that are going on related to facilities at the university, so they keep up with what's happening in the different areas. For example, they approved the modifications to Growl, the renovations to Growl sometime in the past. Now we're working on them. So we're always updating that. And let's see, the tuition and fee schedule, of course, as you mentioned, already was approved. And if you have any course fees or so for some particular courses that need materials, for, we present it to them. So those are the kind, and we discuss with them hiring, resignations, retirements or so that take place. So we just keep them informed because the responsibility has to do with setting policy, approving the budget, you know, hiring or firing the president, you know, those kinds of things. So, and as I said, they meet 4 to 6 times a year. And one of those times there's a retreat where they actually have an extended period of time to talk about items that require some discussion, conversation, to update them on trends in higher education, for them to get a more in-depth view as to some of the areas that we're doing, we're working on, and so on.
And members of the Board of Regents are appointed by the governor.
They're all appointed by the governor. We have 7 members of the board. One is a student, also appointed by the governor. And then there are 6 members. Currently, we, of course, have those 6 members. It's a very good working group.
That was Southeast President Dr. Carlos Vargas speaking with KRCU's Dan Woods. Sadly, that's our show, but you can hear the stories from our community project, Dear Heartland, and learn more about the latest developments at Southeast at krcu.org, or find us on iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me Friday nights at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.